Joining me online now from Southern California, or I guess Northern California, is Brian X. Chen, who is with Wired Magazine. He's finished a book called Always On, which is a compelling read about basically this generation of iPhone users primarily that is always connected. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And the your book is, your prologue is pretty compelling in the book. You talk about the fact that you just, you kind of had this this revelation as you were using your iPhone for more and more, that it is, it's socially changing the way that we, the way that we live.
Yeah, I mean, the prologue contains the reason I decided to write the book, and it kicked off from a conversation I had with a cab driver. He was trying to argue that the Amish are the smartest people on the planet because they do everything with their hands and they don't like necessarily buy a lot of electronics. They sometimes borrow things, or they'll, you know, hire cab drivers to drive them, but they won't own cars. So they're completely self-reliant. And he was trying to argue that because we're all reliant on smartphones, we're becoming basically idiots. We just don't really know how to do anything with our brains. So that got me thinking, you know, like, what is the exchange going forward? I mean, what's the trade-off? Are we really getting dumber? Are we getting smarter? Are we just adapting to new technology, and is this necessarily a good thing? So I look at both the good and the bad of this technology, and also what it means going forward on a big picture level, like how does this change society? What are the implications of having potentially anything, anytime, and from anywhere through these app stores and these very smart interfaces that we call apps now on smartphones?
Well, it's, you know, the, there's no question that the instant access to all information is changing us, and the fact that we're using new communication tools where we're not using, where a conversation between two people can occur by texting, it can occur by FaceTime, it can occur by email, it can occur by just, you know, by punctuation to a certain extent. And I know that there's generational issues where different generations feel that their communication tools, that the way that they do things are best. There's a certain, I guess, for lack of term, arrogance attached to each of the ways that we're comfortable. But the advance of technology has broken all of that.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree. And some topics I dive into in the book is, I mean, one big exchange that we have, of course, like when we're plugging into a world we're always on, we're sacrificing a lot of our privacy.
Yes.
We're getting all this rich personalized data, and as a result, the exchange is that we also have to give up some privacy. There's an inherent sacrifice here. And I think going forward, the traditional definition of privacy is going out the window. We have to think, because we have to give some of it up in exchange to get services, I think the new definition of privacy is just being able to, for one thing, know the type of data that we're transmitting and having the option to just opt out of a service if they're misusing our data in a way that we really wouldn't want them to.
And is that a sense of a bit of righteous indignation, the fact that people are discovering things about us? And I think people take it personally when the fact is you're not, they aren't really, it's not really a personal thing. You're just a number. You're just a data point. That's one of the, you know, when I have conversations with my friends about it, and they're concerned, like even something as simple as Facebook scraping data off of their, you know, the fact I put down that I like fly fishing and I get fly fishing ads in my mm-hmm. Facebook page. They say, well, you know, they're invading your privacy. I think a lot of us think that there's an actual person there making that decision, saying, I'm going to send Steve a fly fishing ad, but it's not that case. I'm not a person to them. I'm just a, as I say, a data point. I'm just a number on the internet.
I think a lot of companies are claiming that a lot of this data is anonymized, but we are taking a leap of faith when it comes to believing them and trusting them. And we're also seeing some examples in my book. I show that some people are breaking these rules. They're not actually using the data that they said they were going to be using it for. Like, say, for example, there's been some studies on some iPhone and Android apps, and people found that Pandora was sharing your location information when all they do is provide music streaming service for you. They're sharing your music, your location, your age, other information that could allow advertisers to create this really detailed profile for you, even though it doesn't have your name attached. They could easily figure that out.
So there's those issues of trust will become so relevant for people to be able to determine what services they opt in and opt out of. Do you think it'll become public which services are less trustworthy than others?
the services that are being exposed to misuse information are already being disciplined by larger companies like Apple or Google, but the issue is that there's so much going on these smartphones. These applications are so automatic and so small that it's really just difficult to see for even Apple to monitor all the apps and see if developers are respecting our privacy. And usually they do, but there have been at least 100 cases where smartphone app developers have just gone out of their way to take our personal information and share it with third-party advertisers.
So obviously that's going to be damaging to the entire industry as people basically are informed of this and kind of rise in indignation over it. So how does somebody then, where there's so many new apps being released on such a ongoing basis, and we can't expect Apple or the different service providers who provide the stores for us to download the apps to monitor this, how does the average person then begin to protect their own privacy in a world where they want to engage?
And that's definitely the issue, the challenge right now in this always connected age. Like, how can I know what these applications are doing? I think the safest thing that people could possibly do is just to be a little bit skeptical in general about this new technology, and also be cautious about the information they're storing on their phones. Think before you tweet, or don't really keep incriminating evidence on your smartphones. Something I also mention is that police are also taking advantage of smartphones and how they're a treasure trove of personal information. And a police officer could just pull you over if he wanted to. He could search your smartphone, look at your text messages, your photos, your emails, and it's just so much personal information being invaded. And they use that to help them figure out if you're really violating or committing a crime.
Wow, I hadn't thought of having my phone searched. There's going to be some interesting case law coming down, whether they need search warrants for that or that sort of stuff in the future.
Right. I mean, something I also raised the point about how law, privacy laws are just kind of outdated in comparison to the rampant progress of technology. So the Fourth Amendment right now, which protects you from unrightful searches, allows police officers to open closed containers like a pack of cigarettes. They could search a pack of cigarettes, but an iPhone is considered a closed container, so they could just open it and search it without any limitations right now.
Wow. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
Now, so you are living in San Francisco, obviously an iPhone user. You walk the walk with the technology. Have you changed your habits of how you do things based on the research that you've done for the book?
Yeah, I would say that I've learned to, when you're using new technology, it's like forming a new skin. And I've learned to be a little bit more protective of my own personal information. And, I mean, I just tend to not store a lot of my really private information on my smartphone, even though it's kind of ideal to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I avoid internet services when it comes to storing things like credit card information and stuff like that. But I think in general, I'm not being a Luddite, not being scared. I'm just being skeptical. I'm remaining skeptical. And, for example, I have my passcode lock screen on just because if I were pulled over, I would want to try to prevent police officers from searching my phone.
Just on principle.
Yeah, I mean, just like even though I don't think I'm doing anything wrong, I just don't want a police officer searching my smartphone. It just seems like it's kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, it certainly would be an invasion of privacy unless you know.
So, I mean, that's like one small thing that I would advise people to do, even if they're not paranoid about their information. Just turn on that passcode lock because it could act as a barrier to being unrightly or wrongly searched, I think.
Right back at the beginning, you mentioned the fact that the cab driver asserted that started this whole journey for you. The cab driver asserted that he thought that smartphones were making us dumber. Did you find that finally at the end of the day?
So I think with any new technology, there's a period of social unease. Like, say, for example, I mean, Socrates thought that the pen was going to destroy our ability to memorize, which I thought was pretty funny. I think right now with smartphones, what's going on is that people are looking at this and saying, oh my God, I'm multitasking all the time. I'm juggling all this information back and forth. I'm skimming articles. Does this make me a dumb person? And I definitely sense that there is a period of social unease going on right now. And from I decided to dive into the research studies on this topic, and it turns out there aren't very many studies even on this topic yet, and there's only maybe one that maybe slightly suggests that we're not very good at multitasking, but it's definitely not authoritative. And for the most part, there's just no evidence suggesting that we're getting any dumber or any smarter from this technology. I think the consensus is that to say that media is bad for you, as in like digital media, it's like saying food is bad for you. Like some food is good for you and some food is bad for you and depends on different quantities. I think with media consumption, different types of media affect a person in different ways. And it's really, I think, irresponsible to just sort of generalize and say smartphones are making us dumber, which is what a lot of people in media are doing right now, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, the bottom line is if we're in charge, then we can decide what works for us and what doesn't. Just like, as you say, deciding on your diet. Some foods are good, some foods are bad, and it's how you use them and when you choose to eat them and how you integrate them in your life. Media is going to be the exact same. Using this technology where it fits and where it makes sense in the naked light of day, understanding what you're giving up in order to have the access to the technology, that's really the key.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way of putting it. And I think in this new age, the most sophisticated and powerful human beings are going to be the ones who know how to use this data to really enhance their lifestyles and their professions. And like one example in the book was an example of a photographer, a professional photographer who went blind when he was 40 because of a brain tumor. And he took some smartphone apps, and he was able to use one app to take light and through the camera sensor translate that into sounds. And using the sounds, he was able to stitch an image in his head and be able to see through using these sounds again and take photos. And now he's still a professional photographer, even though he's completely blind. So I think stories like these are just fascinating and just imply so much about where people are heading.
The book is Always On. Brian X. Chen is the author, and it's available in major bricks and mortar bookstores as well as the Kindle store, iBooks, and even an audio version with Brian reading it on audible.com. Thank you, Brian.
Hey, thanks so much, Steve.
Have a good day.